Ladies, gentlemen, and friends, much still continues to happen at Warminster, which is inexplicable. Now, I say that deliberately because we've had a very nasty hoax apparently played on us at Warminster on Bufora night of last year, when two young fools, and whoever engineered the plot was an idiot, deliberately filled two balloons with helium. And as opposed to us, who stick strictly to truth as we know it, they tried to fool some very nice people on the hill. Point number one. Be very careful, because something can boomerang with quite dreadful results if one tampers in a very serious subject of great importance in a negative way. It's a solemn opening. I'm sorry about that. We had Mick Taylor of the Rolling Stones, who took up from young Jones, who died, as you probably know, on our hill two Sundays ago. You'll probably hear from him himself what he saw. Robert Chapman, science man of the Sunday Express, has had the moral courage to tell the world what he saw. Patrick Moore, BBC Two team, came down. Ask the cameramen, ask the technicians, even the girl who was manipulating the clapperboard, scene two, take one, and all that sort of thing. Rather nice if you could get to them and ask them what they saw, because the program was deliberately cut in order to knock this subject flat. And unfortunately, when negative types come to our hill or to any other watching point, when they deal in negative action, in a rather mean, petty, spiteful way, perhaps to hit at three or four very sincere people who are trying to find out something for the benefit of many, when they do this, they don't hit those people at all. Our hides are as thick as rhinoceros hides by now. We don't worry. We don't worry. But the point is, they're hitting the validity, the relevance, and the great importance of the subject. August 27th, we had a landing at Warminster. And of course, the experts came down to knock that one down. We had the courage to, and the people who saw this landing had the courage, all 13 of them, to allow their names to be used in any magazine or UFO publication that we wished. Cosmos came down, and according to its director, Mr. Norman Oliver, good friend of mine, they discovered a point that we had missed somewhere along the way. This was a little team, armed, if you like, that's a bad expression, but equipped with Geiger counter, who went to the area, and where the figure had been standing, they didn't get any variation in field strength at all from the instrument. All they had was complete packing up of that instrument. August 27th, 1969. According to the one very good witness of the figure could easily have been that of a special visitor on August 27th, the same date, 1967, dealt with in my second book. Now, of course, we are laughed at if we make any claim which is not measurable by the yardsticks of scientific concepts and training as we know it on this planet, or know them. So when we allude quite truthfully to quite bizarre to apparently extravagant and outlandish incidents that occur, such as the footsteps of the invisible walker. Of course, we're ridiculed. Doesn't worry us. We seek truth that we want. And it could be, you know, that in the final analysis of all this, truth will come sooner or later to each individual. Call this intuition, if you like. Never be swayed by the arguments, no matter how well reasoned, no matter how eloquent the speaker. Never be swayed by what he tells you. Go and see for yourself. And then perhaps the little mustard seed which is here will begin to flourish, will be nurtured, and will carry you on to truths which could be quite transcendental of anything that we know scientifically. Four established groups have been to Warminster, including the South Hertfordshire group, and they have been astounded by an invisible walker who came right between them on top of the hill and separated their particular group. You see, perhaps what appear outlandish, ridiculous things said, apparently on the spur of the moment, but I'm very careful what I say, laughed at, derided, the skeptics, the cynics, dig in their nasty, vicious fangs. Then, perhaps months later, poor old Shuttleworth's gang, vindicated by experience of others. Now, the landing has been dealt with, but I would like to tell you of a recent event, January the 18th of this year, which was a Sunday. The National Vice Chairman of Contact UK, whom I like very much, and I like their group, came. His name is John Rosevere, a young scientist, an avant-garde type of scientist, with a very open mind, receptive to new truths. And he came to Warminster, came to the hill, and at 9:30 exactly, this is what we were seeing. A golden craft to the west-southwest that came in apparently from the Clay Hill area. And if any of you know Cradle, if you look back at Warminster, you'll see the dip, triangle of sorts, between Cop Heap on the left, which is a high promontory, and the Gulf Club, Westorts Golf Club, on the right. This craft came in, was quite close, was no more, we assessed afterwards in retrospect, than a mile distant from where we stood. And it was no higher in altitude than the one that was featured there for 3 minutes, stationary at the landing time last August. And this particular one was a pure golden colour. Ellipsoid. No irregularity at all once it had remained, had come to a stationary position. There was no halo or force field around it. From the top of it, unwavering, was a brilliant silvery plume. A fairly stiff southeasterly wind, and the plume didn't waver an iota, and it straddled the top of the craft, inverted commas, craft. We watched in amazement because we had been talking about the peculiarity of the cube root 3, the recurrence of the figure 9 in investigation, the peculiarities that computer readings have had recently, as some of you will know, and this is a scientific fact, of the Great Pyramid, how they change from day to day. And we were talking about the long ago in that context, not a religious duo. This was just an ordinary, fairly scientific conversation between two friends. But perhaps what we were thinking stirred reaction from this object. And the thinking intelligence aboard the object. Here, perhaps, is the most staggering part of this little event. When the craft began to glow very fiercely, and then blacked out, and it was beginning to do three on-off movements of light radiation, we could discern at the bottom of the craft a huge pyramid. Not literally, but pyramid-shaped from the bottom of the craft. This was very dark, very opaque, silhouetted against the brilliant light. And it was at the base of this craft, this golden craft. Then we could tell that the pyramid was dropping to Earth. Both of us commented that what a terrific glow we were feeling at that particular time, and I think that this is a common factor from almost all UFOs that we know. And we did a survey, quite a big survey, afterwards. Now, John Rosevere went out to Tynham. He found the marks on the ground of an apparent landing at about the same period that we in Warminster had ours, in August 69. And he thought, well, the experts have had their say. This is a hoax. But he found Mr. and Mrs. X. He had the common sense and the scientific know-how to take down measuring instruments. And he recorded a great radiation difference around those holes. This surely is the first, it's the primary essential to all research. Where anything is scientifically measurable, for heaven's sake, do it. I've never disagreed with that. Some people have said after I've talked, Shuttlewood is interesting, but he doesn't believe in science. I do. And that's the whole essential point. But not restricted and restrictive science. Science that has taken the blinkers off, taken the cotton wool that's absorbing the mind, and is willing to let light stream in. Thank heaven there are such scientists, and John Rosevere is one. But perhaps the point is, what does it all mean? And are we perhaps prone to think as ultra-realists, perhaps in the wrong sense, that everything which is strange, which is out of context with what we know scientifically, perhaps we think if it doesn't conform to the physique, shape, pattern, form, light movement, radiation, wavelength that we can measure, it doesn't exist. This was one of the contentions, to a large extent, of the laborious and deadly dull Condon report. But of course, the invalidity of that report lay in the fact that there was a body of science, not one of whom had seen anything inexplicable. So important to see. Now, people are inclined to fall into two groups. We find, even on our hill, where we had an average of about 60 people from all parts of the country and the world throughout the summer months, we find that there are those who are so physically minded that even after seeing something at fairly close range on occasion, they are so prone to say, it must be like us. It's from another planet, but it has physique, it has substance, it has all the physical properties that we on Earth know. Nothing could be further than the truth, from the truth. We've taken well over 3,000 photographs in a period now of over 4 years on that hill. Not 3,000 craft, don't misunderstand me, and we've only had about 109 fairly satisfactory developments. Indications, therefore, are, if one views it rationally, and that's the safe course, what you're capturing on film, what the camera eye, the sensitive eye of the camera, is recording, is probably substantial. Perhaps not metallic, but substantial, and has physical properties, as we know apparent solids to comprise in our reckoning. So therefore, it is fairly reasonable to deduce that those few could come from other planets. But here's the horrifying truth, and perhaps, depending on how one views it, the degree of horror or enlightenment: the majority are not capturable by even the finest cameras. And we've even had the Pathé News chap, Bill Nixon, up there, unable to take a shot of certain of these. And those, often enough, have been so close to us. And therefore, again, with the process of logic, reasoning as we know it, and scientific analysis, one would say this needn't necessarily be extraterrestrial in the hard, mechanical, technological sense of the term. This could be something intradimensional, capable of changing shape and form, and how many thousands of witnesses have sworn that they've seen an ellipsoid turn into a triangle. A chap at Warman's the other week saw a triangle with a light at each corner in the sky. Now, anything which is capable of doing this, which we suspected was extraterrestrial, which some people would imagine could even be of a type of phenomena which is really not of this world, in a way. It doesn't fit anything scientific, you see. But it's as though atoms and molecules are split up, dispersed, form a different pattern, and then are drawn coherent as a swarm of bees into a pattern that we recognize again. And this could, we put this forward unequivocally. We put this forward firmly, meekly, no ego in this at all. We feel that this is, or Warminster is, a vortex of abnormal magnetic properties, and that there exists there a point on this Earth where, of course, the concentration of magnetic field force lines is abnormal, and this is scientifically provable and has been proved. We would contend, particularly with what Patrick Moore and the camera team saw, that this is a point where what our science calls a time and a space warp exists, allowing the forming of a gateway or a window, if you like, that lets in another dimension, which can then come into ours, converge and mix with it. But not necessarily extraterrestrial. You know, again, a thing to laugh at, obviously. We stuck our poor little necks out. The opposites, the turning arounds, the things happening back to front on the hill, where a lad's tape recorder was dismantled, all the parts taken apart and laid in reverse order within the space of a minute on one hill at Warminster, in a locked car. Film removed from canisters turned the wrong way round, and no one knows what the agency was, or perhaps why. an old lady with her knitting needles, knitting some socks and things for grandchildren. The knitting needles had disappeared, and we turned her little mini upside down because the poor soul was concerned about this. She's getting over 80. Love and devotion went into the knitting. We eventually found the knitting needles 2 hours later, exactly where she had put them in the glove compartment, turned the wrong way round. Now, what can we deduce with our scientific measuring sticks? What is there in those bizarre, almost macabre happenings? Mind-bedeviling happenings. Thank God we've got strong minds, perhaps. What on earth can we measure in that sort of thing? Assuming that those responsible are from these, quote, craft, unquote. To begin with, we thought that here were astral entities that were quite mischievous, poltergeist ghosts, verging on the supernatural. Negative forces, discarnate disembodied entities that were there to not only to add to the ridicule of the wonderful subject of ufology, but also to denigrate it and those who watch, so that newcomers would be driven by sheer panic, hysteria and fright from the hill. We were wrong. We were wrong. Think of what was mutely being conveyed. Most probably, not just possibly, and we've meditated long and objectively on this. The opposite gets you to truth. The opposites to what you think are truth. Diametrically opposed, no matter how foolish they may seem, are scientifically true. The pointers were there, so what do? We start to disseminate the knowledge accumulated, which we thought was negative, and find that there's a rich, wonderful strata of the positive running through. The opposite, or the invisible things, in the whole of the universe are the strongest. Stupid to say that, isn't it? Stupid. Here's my physique. This is me. With these hands, these little appendages here, I can build you this hall. I can build you a plane, transport, your house, bricks, mortar, highways, cars. But those are directed. Those are intelligently controlled by the invisible force in man. We talk about mind over matter. It goes deeper. Mind creates matter. So that everything which we know as material and man-made in a manual way comes from that creative force which is not measurable. You can measure the brain, you can measure the electrical current that even comes from fingertips, you can measure man as the human voltage cell is here. If you sleep with your head facing north, you get a good night's sleep because you're in line with the polar layout, polarity layout. Man is basically an electrical unit, and we know this, of course, but of course it goes deeper again than that. You can measure the cellular grey matter of the brain. You can measure every organ in the human body. But the part that one cannot measure, so important, is a man's creative ability and what brings him to bring that out of himself. We breathe. If we didn't, we would die. No one sees air. You don't see it. It's one of the invisible forces, but one of the strongest forces in the universe. Probably I should be, according to some cynics who call us all sorts of things from homosexuals to cranks. And they invited me to go. This is the annoying part. Perhaps, of course, we should be in a padded cell. 12 inches thick steel around us. Locked away with a few desert island discs, perhaps. On a radio set. Now, the radio set. If you calibrate that to the right wavelength and frequency, even in a padded cell, you're never alone. You can get music at the press of a button from thousands of miles away, Tokyo, Australia, say what you will. You will get it coming to you over all that intervening distance because you have calibrated on one of the great cosmic energies that we know loosely as electricity, but which is the fundamental life stream of the universe, comes through to you, and you've been knocked away. An invisible force, so strong, atmosphere, so strong, the sun's rays, so strong, you don't see them. They aren't something that you can grab hold of and say, there you are, mate, nuts and bolts are nothing, as Bufora says, put it there and analyze it. No, it's invisible. And I'm not being disrespectful to the whole of Bufora. Many friends, only to the closed-minded, and deliberately tonight, because this is the last speech I make. Sun's rays, the sun, the central stabilizing wonder of our solar system, of any solar system, and it pours out those life-giving, light-giving, heat-giving, beautiful rays in a love force. Invisible, so powerful, to everything that's animate in this world or any other. Wind can be corrosive, can be erosive, can be destructive, can be very constructive. An invisible force. Strong. More powerful than anything we know that's physical and material. The power that generates from our Earth and forms a magnetic and a gravitational field. Such great power there. If we could harness onto it. It may be that man has conquered a range of electrical force fields which he has obviously termed in the main, and there's no unwitting electric main pun there, to useful purposes. But is it so ridiculous? Should it invite such cheap cynicism if a deep thinker, after being on a hill for 4 years and definitely seeing something respectable, is it so ridiculous to suppose that there may be millions of hidden cosmic energies driving throughout this universe that if man would use sensibly, and the great intelligence of all would appreciate that he would do so, rather than, as all things indicate, he will abuse those energies. It could quite easily happen that man would know far, far more than he does today. Could be that we're not permitted. We are not yet ready. And talking about these invisible things, Brian here has told you I'm writing a third book, it's my last one, and then I drop right from the scene for obvious reasons if you think. Ridicule? Big shoulders? Take it. Little children at school of mine called mad because their father is mad? I can't take that. I can't take that. But let's look at something a little different. If this is part of the message that these, quote, craft, unquote, are trying to give us for some deep-seated and profound reason that perhaps we can only guess at, then it's obvious that man's attitude, perhaps in general, must change. Well, it's obvious. One doesn't have to repeat about the dangers of deadly pollution, indiscriminate drug taking, pollution of water and of air, nuclear stupid experimentation, the stockpiling of enough nuclear missiles in the states alone to blow our kingdom to blow our planet to kingdom come at least 10 times over, enough bacteriological germs and chemical warfare supplies at Porton and Nantsuk in Cornwall to kill our world 30 times over in a few hours. You don't have to be an idiot, do you, surely, to appreciate that there must be a deep, deep current of great concern among the more advanced, kinder, more loving forces of this universe. And those are the ones who are here, in our estimation. The concern that they must feel. The finger is practically on the trigger of oblivion. It's no good saying, well, we're all scared to death. We all know what one atom bomb could do if it dropped on London. That's not the point. It's the mania behind that drive that counts. That terrific obsession, whether it's between east and west, south and north, makes no difference. The billions and billions of currency of this world, which are expended so bovinely, short-sightedly, not only on nuclear missiles, but on anti-ballistic missiles and what have you. Think of what they show you in this connection. If one of the nations of this world today was so technologically advanced that it had developed a nuclear warhead of a chemical compound as a container that could not be detected and would not absorb light rays, so therefore would be undetected by radar. Think of that. And those craft are that sort, but they don't carry those nuclear warheads. They carry something far, far more positive. An awakening spirit in man. The BOAC pilot, do you remember on a program on television which was fairly sensible apart from one or two things about pancakes and a deputy dog sheriff somewhere in the States? You can remember, I'm sure, the testimony given by that very reliable man, thousands of flying hours to his credit. And when the commentator said to him, what was your reaction when these six little gunmetal grey balls suddenly left the scene? What was your reaction? And he said, and I'm sure that many of you who know will echo these sentiments, because they are showing such kindness in allowing us to see them. He said, I felt as though I had lost my best friend. This is general. And when you read some of the sensational rubbish from the States, which I, as a journalist, a professionally trained man, and this is where I bring in the I because of the job that I do, I've checked and checked and checked in South America, and 95% of all stories which come under the hostile nomenclature, if you like, rubbish. If there's any antagonism at all in any contact of that nature, it has stemmed and originated from the ground. And a salutary little lesson has been taught those who automatically fire at everything that moves, as the military does at Warminster. See anything move? Shoot it. That was my advice when I was in the Guards during the war. And perhaps man, unfortunately, has devolved into that quagmire of mistrust, hostility, suspicion, the primitive urge to kill, wound, maim anything that one doesn't understand, and automatically reckons to be an enemy, a potential enemy. Now, invisible forces, we think that that was the salient message in what we saw. What about this peculiar manifestation on January the 18th? And again, you see, August 27th, 2 and 7 equals 9 cube root 3. The Holy Trinity, or the three great forces in the universe? Doesn't matter how one looks at that. But think of this, perhaps. Long before the days of Christ, and John and I were discussing this, megalithic crosses antedated Christ by many thousands of years. The Chinese philosophy, which predicates yin and yang, is quite important today. The Japanese, I think, predicate nig and neg. And you may well ask, well, here's a lot of double dutch from that chap from Warminster, but what does he mean? Yin and yang, where the Chinese predicate the opposite poles in every part of existence. North, south, the ultimates. Positive, negative in electrical fields, the opposites. Male, female, the opposites. Heat, cold, the opposites. And within those opposites, somewhere along the line between the opposites of all those things mentioned there, three things happen. There's a meeting of forces. Maybe that it's like repelling, like of course, and unlike attracting, its opposite number. Principles of polarity. Heat and cold, male, female, north, south. In the center of all these ranges between the absolutes of black and white in existence, if you like, are the graduated grays where truth occurs as we know it. And it comes about through the meeting or the action of these forces at one point. In a crude, analogical sense, male, female. Find they're suited. The attraction is there. They marry, bear offspring. The attraction. Another repels. So that you get three actions. You get the action of meeting of these forces in between. You get the interaction that's set up by the conflict or the agreeability of these forces. Then you get the reaction, the end result, the consequence, the logical development. And it could be, you know, that so much in life which is mysterious to us, perhaps because we are such realists in the wrong sense, that there's universal truth staring us in the face. Now, if you will, I normally speak off the cuff, as you know. I hate using the word I, but I would like to read a portion of my last book. If you'll bear with me. Do you mind if I sit down to...
Of course, sir.
If you can't hear, do ask. Time. If instead, let us forget present assumptions of our earth with a molten interior. Because local and natural nuclear reactors may be the cause of volcanoes. Regard it as a golf ball with a knobbly skin and an elastic interior composed of magnetism instead of rubber, with a helium core. This is renewed daily by the diurnal rotation of Earth rolling a fresh spiral of magnetism downwards through the core. The 90 degrees thrust of magnetism supplies what we know as gravity. Both operate under square law. And this can account for magnetic variations, obviously. Because the Earth is a dynamotor and a paradox. The magnetic component of the Earth is interdependent yet distinct from the visible globe, and lines of force can break and heal without harm to the inertial effect of the globe as a flywheel. There seems good evidence to suppose that there is a very strong connection between magnetism and time, which we define as indefinite duration. Entropy, diurnal rotation, and time all move one way and are irreversible. Magnetism has a cyclic reversal and, under stress, a random backlash when a break occurs. We know that electricity is magnetism at a speed of 186,000 miles per second. Magnetism, however, is electricity at a variable low speed. If we once suspect that time is continuous and spiral like the elastic interior of our planet, we could further fairly sensibly suppose that the elastic magnetic tape carries a memory bank and a predictor record, providing mechanism for precognition dreams and prophecies by the human receiver plugging in to the appropriate tape. Predictor may function like computer and thus register present trends. Dreams from long past time may simply be emanations from buried tape and not carried in the subconscious of the individual, as is often supposed by spiritualists, mediums, etc. The sun is important. I won't digress here on what the sun is pushing out and diffusing constantly. But you'll have to excuse me. I want to cut out the dull parts and leave little things, perhaps, for scientists and others to mull over and see what they get. Their reactions and their findings could be so important. Man has always believed in an afterlife. From the ancestral propitiation of animism to the teachings of the Christian Church. And man is assumed to possess a spirit defined by spiritualists as an astral body. Yet there's no need to confuse the mystery of life by invoking the stars. Using Occam's razor, for example, we can assume that the perishable electromechanical chemical body of animate life is essentially a robot operated and activated by a magnetic plasma which we know as the spirit. And this spirit is everywhere. It appertains to all bodies in the universe. The magnetism is carried on particles of a slightly unstable gas. And we would say, through certain things that we have discovered quietly, that this could be helium-5 or helium-7. Spirit of wine is the gas of alcohol. The spirit of man is equally a gas. By elimination, an isotope of helium is strongly indicated. Let's go on to the essential part, perhaps. The time stream that's concurrent with space as we know it. A gaseous body, for example, the spirit of man, if a spirit does exist, there are good scientific reasons for supposing that this could be so, can pass through walls and doors. And perhaps these atoms, which also are molecules, of course, are of an isotope not yet isolated, nor ever can be, because no man is an island, as some of us have postulated before. A gaseous body still possessing the intelligence of the robot, and free from visible viability, can equally live on in an environment of less sophisticated atoms and derive its nourishment from a weaker magnetic field. There's one point, if that can be proved in the near future, that I beg of you to think of. For heaven's sake, don't create that artificial barrier between matters which are truly of spiritual momentum and those which are of scientific importance. There's no barrier between the two. Science is spirit and spirit is science. If we could only eliminate that false artificial distinction, every Bufora, Contact UK, Cosmos, bless their hearts, every group would function perfectly without any nasty, backbiting cynicism which erupts. Don't drive your fellow beings away. Come together. So important. People say, why doesn't Shuttle join us? We don't want to join any group because we would feel it a bounden duty, if we belong to any group, for that group to substantiate our humble claims. And we can't expect that. And we shouldn't expect to try and pressurize anyone into a belief that we hold. This is so true. The final answer to everything in ufology or in any other of the many psychical aspects of life which could be so important, no one person, no one group, no one body should deliberately pressurize their opposite numbers into a belief. So important. The individual assessment is the only criterion that you must have. So it's so important in near future years when you see for yourself, when you have certain unlooked for, perhaps very complex situations arising because of what you know is true. Don't worry about the others. Their turn has still to come. So important. The book goes on about the first synthetic alpha, which came from bombs, which are too much to handle at once. Early reports, of course, of UFOs that greatly antedate the 1947 reports. Certain things which are touched upon lightly in this book for obvious reasons, because so many people unfortunately don't read the right books. And this is not a plug for my books, don't think that, but by the right books, the Quran, the Bible, so much of value is there. These are things we find out and we aren't religious to begin with at all. Probably aren't today. Not religious, but spiritual and scientific, yes. One of the most disturbing effects to and on humans from this plasma of the UFO is sound. Yet it's reassuring to note that the energy emitted is very small. As an example, the total energy produced by a Wembley Stadium football crowd shouting goal would hardly boil a cup of water. Scientific fact. The least disturbing at any one moment of time now on this time spiral is the extremely brief repetition of quantum pulses. This affects the appropriate organ for the reception of what people call extrasensory perception. The pineal gland, the pea-sized gland at the base of the skull, the opening of the third eye, which at the moment in many people is passive but is being activated by these craft. So important. These forces are moving in for a purpose. And for heaven's sake, don't go away and say, well, Shuttlewood's so despondent he thinks the world's going to end. No, not in a physical calamitous sense at all, but man must change. It's the change that's going to be wrought in man, or else! Exclamation point. Without the latest medical dictionary, for example, can present no explanation of the function of the pineal gland. But it can be firmly suggested, even on our experiences at Warminster, that it is an undeveloped detail awaiting mutation and exercise in use towards reliable communication by telepathy. All of you must know when you say something to another at one time, perhaps in an unguarded moment, perhaps in a flush of enthusiasm which isn't justified, or even when you write a letter to someone, whether it's a dear one or someone that you know as a casual acquaintance and has a kindred interest in perhaps important things in life. So often happens, doesn't it, that you're misconstrued and the very meaning that you've kept well away from seems to come through in that letter to the person whom you're addressing or that you're speaking to. Such a pity, because purity of thought cannot come through the written word or the spoken word. But if there ever comes a time when the channel of mental communication is opened up 100%, and this is on the cards, we feel, with respect, then purity and truth will be the absolute order of that day, because that is pure. It's the helium drive. It could be, too, that what people look upon as a second coming, and here I address perhaps a limited number of you, I love you as much as I love all the others, have great concern. Those who think that the second coming of Christ could be due in the next decade, perhaps worried, obviously worried, as to what form it will take, the sword of the Spirit, the twinkling of an eye, lightning striking from east to west. It could come in two ways. Feasible ways, scientifically. The opening to the fullest maximum of that optic, if you like, the third optic or the pineal, which can be activated from its passive state and can awaken to new life, given the right inducement. And in the chromosomic structure of man, medical science is still a little bit bewildered over two genes which they term mute, mysterious, silent, dormant. There have been so many mutations, and one can talk about thalidomide, one can talk about schizophrenia, one can talk about all sorts of things which obviously fit into that particular category to a certain extent. The evolution of man, mutation, necessary mutation. But supposing that a new cosmic force is suddenly unleashed on this planet, and it activates and awakens those dormant genes, the rod-like containers containing everything, genetic makeup of man, hereditary factors, everything. If that final mutation is made and those genes are awakened, it could be, and I don't say it would be, but it could be, that this is in effect the second coming. In a scientific way, when Christ, assuming he was crucified, assuming He ascended, and resurrection took place. And he then tells us in another part of the Bible, as I can do, so can ye do likewise, and there will be greater than I to come. One can't imagine that latter. But if one tries humbly to read the wonderful beauty behind and within and secreted away, perhaps, in some of the parables of Christ, could it be that when he ascended, and I'll read you this short extract here, could be important, we don't know. By reason of the DNA spiral, a child is a genetic combination of parents and ancestors, every individual unique in form, space, time. Time factor, important, but as we know it, irrelevant. The illusion is probably as mechanical as a teletape recording looped up in correct sequence by the pineal eye. The most tremendous event in recent history is without doubt AD 1 to AD 30. Jesus of Nazareth is quoted as having promised to return without stating any specific period. Prophetic assumptions that he would be reincarnated in 2,000 years are just assumptions with perhaps an unusual slant. Following the axiom of astronomy that the brightest stars burn out fastest, one could reasonably submit that the plasma of Jesus faded out soon after ascension. Now, what do we really mean by that? His atoms diffused. And the words of the Holy Communion service, where two or three are gathered together in my name, are a true statement of something which is beyond Mendelism and a reversal of the magnetic truth, the attraction of opposites. Yin-yang. It's bound within those extremities. He was a mutation of mind which has spread gradually and at some periods disastrously when repulsion of like particles has produced schisms and jihads. Science, the spiritual, one. I won't read any more because I'd rather speak off the cuff. One is more natural than reading something which has emanated through various agencies which could be very reliable. But I would leave you, if I may, if you want to hear any more, please say so, and I'm quite willing. But on the basis of the landings, the actual landings at Warminster that we have seen, of the figure which has been seen now on four occasions, of the fact that UFOs can absolutely disappear from one place and materialize again in the same place minutes later, my only quiet advice, and heaven knows I've had to take my advice and given myself some real brow beatings to try and become so logical rather than illogical, so rational when the temptation is to be irrational, and lacking all supernatural paraphernalia, because nothing rises above nature. In fact, it appears to do so to us, but there again, evolution brings truth in all aspects, providing the seeker is sincere. So the final thing, what man thinks today, inevitably, he becomes tomorrow. Once he's grasped the essential fact that he is part of all others and is quietly proud of the fact that they are all part of him. Who is my brother? Who is my mother? who were waiting without, remember? All men are my brothers. Love ye one another. The same beautiful warmth of love which comes from the sun, right up from the little flower and the organic earth, right up to our colossi, if you like, of humanity. Strikes everything which has been created, and nothing which has been created will ever perish. It's made for a purpose. The humble oak, or the acorn, drops from the oak tree, forms a fresh tree, or is pulped in with the dead leaves of autumn and winter into the soil, pushed downwards over a period of time, as we know it, of course, and it becomes a stronger, it has a more fundamental role in universal structure. It becomes carbonized, it becomes coal, it becomes crystalline, it becomes diamonds. The humble things of today are the great things of tomorrow. And the more humble humanity is today in the face of the great power which is there ready to help, but not going to produce nuts and bolts. Too easy. Where's your faith? That power is yours for the taking if your attitude is right today. And for heaven's sake, don't think my attitude is right. Much weakness to be transmuted yet. Much digging within to get out the dross and separate the gold from the negative. Yet on the same basis, if man aspires too high in a spiritual sense, if he runs or tries to run before he can walk in this new dimensional status which is approaching, if you seek nothing but the light and the positive, remember this, yin and yang. Man has his positive components and he has his negative components, particularly in this present physical mold, which is a transitory state in the whole evolution of life. The more he helps others, he's showing a positive drive. The more he kicks others when they're down, or kills, as I killed during the war, God forgive me, because that's what I was taught. He panders to the negative. His animism is prevalent. It is like the tree of knowledge on this planet today is overweighted by the mass of technological advance by man in the great mania for nuclear oblivion. And at the great detriment of those wonderful little twigs which are trying to push the others off the top. Social, cultural, moral, loving qualities in man. Don't let them be swept down too low. And don't aim too high to begin with and say, I'm going to be so positive from now on. I don't think a negative thought. I reduce. If you try suddenly to reduce, and I'm sorry I split an infinitive there, if you do that, you go against the whole principles of polarity in universal structure. You really destroy yourself. It's like trying to stop up a volcano with a piece of chewing gum. So let your negative parts play a part, but not to hurt, not to retard anyone, not to destroy, and not for the pure lust sense of negativism. But let the negative gradually harmonize with the positive, and the positive, under its own momentum, not ours, carries it to that top strata, which is very near perfection. Thank you very much.